Please rise for the prayer by the Senator from Green, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
Merciful and everlasting ruler of the universe, as we gather today to do the work of the people, we seek your eternal wisdom. We ask that you illuminate our understanding and elevate our deliberation, that we might heed the admonition spoken through the prophet Isaiah. Come now, and let us reason together, says the Lord. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great, great prayer.
Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
The quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 25th day, Monday, February 25th, 2013.
Senator Newton.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as open fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Senator.
President, I would like to announce the photographers from Jefferson City News Tribune and the KOMU 8 News have been given permission to take flash pictures and video in the Senate chamber.
Introduction of guests. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on my left and on your right, I have a very special group. And this is Rolla Day at the Capitol, and believe it or not, a lot of people actually showed up for Rolla Day at the Capitol. And we have with us today the Rolla Chamber Chicks. This would be Stevie Kearse, Amy Campbell, Carolyn Peplow, Robin Southern, and Barry White, whom is not a Chamber Chick, trust me. Thank you.
We're delighted to welcome the Chamber Chicks from Rolla, plus Barry White, guest of the Senator from Phelps, to the Missouri Senate. Senator from Cape Girardeau.
President, announce special guest. To my right and your left, we have people here from Cape Girardeau County representing the Missouri Farm Bureau in their Thank a Farmer Week. We have President Dal Steffens, his wife Helen, and also board member Larry Miller and his wife Patricia. Please stand and welcome the guests.
We're delighted to welcome the Farm Bureau guests of the Senator from Cape to the Missouri Senate. Introductions. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions, introduction of bills. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 378, an act relating to higher education scholarship programs.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an act relating to higher education scholarship programs.
Senator from the 4th. Send your bill forward. Read the bill.
(Clears Senate Bill number 379, introduced by Senator Kevney et al., an act relating to distressed areas, land assemblage tax credit act.
Senator?
No further explanation.
Senator from the 8th?
No explanation necessary.
Send your three bills forward. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 380, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to criminal offenders participating in certain programs provided by the Department of Corrections.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 381, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to the Innovation Education Campus Fund.
Read the third bill.
Senate Bill number 382, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to taxation.
Read the third bill. Oh, that was it. Senator from Cape Girardeau.
No.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 383, introduced by Senator Wallingford, an act relating to retainage requirements on construction of public works projects.
No explanation necessary.
Senator from the 2nd.
I have two bills. I would like to send them forward. My left arm is numb. Either I'm having a heart attack or
I'm not sure. Thank you, Senator. The highest I've ever seen you hold a bill. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 384, introduced by Senator Roop, an act relating to personal guarantee loans.
Senator?
No explanation on that one, Mr. President.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 385, introduced by Senator Roop, an act relating to campaign finance.
Senator?
Just a tiny little bill that deals with campaign finance limits.
Senator. Senator from the 11th.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 386, introduced by Senator Lavota, an act relating to elections.
Senator?
No explanation needed. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 5th.
I have a bill.
Send it forward.
No explanation needed. Thank you,
Read
Mr.
The bill.
President.
Senate Bill number 387, introduced by Senator Nasheed, an act relating to film production tax credits.
Senator from the 9th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Send them forward. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 388, introduced by Senator Curls, an act relating to contracts for deeds.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 389, introduced by Senator Curls, an act relating to the duties of the Board of Probation and Parole.
Thank you. No explanation needed. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills.
President.
Senator from the 14th.
I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 390, introduced by Senator Chappelle Nadal, an act relating to the calculation of weighted average daily attendance.
Mr. President?
This is cleanup language from the bill that passed last year dealing with charter schools.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Green.
Two bills.
Send them forward. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 391, introduced by Senator Dixon, an act relating to the remedy of civil contempt for failure to comply with child support orders.
Senator,
I need to
read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 392, introduced by Senator Dixon, an act relating to institutions of higher education.
I need to explain. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of third reading of Senate bills.
Third reading of Senate bills. Senate committee substitute for Senate bills 176 and 192. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate committee substitute for Senate bill 176 and 192 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate bills 176 and 192 be read a third time and finally passed for the benefit of the body. This is the bridge naming, legislation named after Stan the Man Musial with the amendment from the Senator from St. Genevieve related to the highway, named after Andy Gammon, who passed away in the construction of that bridge, and would be willing to answer any questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion? Senator from the 15th. Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on third reading and final passage. Read the bill. Call the roll.
Senate committee substitute for Senate bills numbers 176 and 192, an act relating to the designation of highway infrastructure. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from Barton, Senator from Cole. By your vote of 33 ayes, 0 no, the bill having won a constitutional majority is declared passed. Without objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from the 4th, Senate Bill 100.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 100 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those
aye.
To the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a bill that exempts inherited IRAs and health savings accounts from bankruptcy proceedings. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 100. Read the bill. Call the roll.
Senate Bill number 100, an act relating to the exemption from attachment and execution of a person's interest in inherited retirement accounts and health savings plans. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce. Richard. Romine. Roop. Sater. Schoff. Schaefer. Schmidt. Sifton. Sylvie. Wallingford. Walsh. Wasson.
By your vote of 32-aye, 1-no, the bill having achieved a constitutional majority is declared passed. Without objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from the 2nd, Senate Bill 60. I'm sorry, Senate Bill 59.
I move that Senate Bill 59 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 59 be read the third time, placed on its final passage. To remind the body, this is the one that dealt with the insurance guarantee limits, bringing them up into kind of the modern limits of where people buy insurance. If an insurance company goes out of business, this association pays into a fund that covers all of those policies that is not funded by the company that went out of business. This just raises those limits because people are buying larger amounts of insurance. I'll gladly answer any questions. If not, I would renew my motion.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from Andrew.
Senator from the 2nd.
Does the senator yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Okay, so for everyone's knowledge on how this works, I want to make sure that I understand it and the members of the body understand it. When an insurance company goes under, for whatever reason, they fold.
Right.
All of the policyholders, the rest of the insurance companies come in and make those policyholders whole.
Correct.
Then through the guarantee fund, whatever that cost to them is, they're able to recoup that back through tax credits through the guarantee.
It's not a tax credit.
Sure it is. We end up paying for it.
It's like a tax abatement or reimbursement. It's not like a credit. They just basically get to deduct that amount that they normally would pay in. So it's not a credit. It's more of a...
Wait a minute. If they would normally pay it, but they get this piece of paper that they don't have to pay it, that's a tax credit.
More of a deduction, I would say, than a credit.
Which is it? Is it a credit or a deduction?
I'd say more of a deduction than a credit.
Okay, is it a dollar for dollar? For every dollar they pay
in? They can't sell it. It's not something you can sell. It's not something you can come back in later time and say.
It's non-refundable. It's non-transferable.
It's the next year they come in and they say, okay, we've had this exposure. We normally pay this amount in a premium tax or whatever. So we had these losses because of this extra company. Then they can make that reduction.
Right. So what you're essentially saying is, but what ends up happening is the taxpayers end up paying for this. I mean, ultimately, this is a flow through.
Well, yeah,
it's a way of the taxpayers paying for it without going through the appropriations. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the taxpayers end up funding this.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean they're funding this through the taxes that they pay on their premium policies, and they go in there, and so in a roundabout long way, they are spreading that out amongst all policyholders.
So they're spreading it out amongst all taxpayers.
But the money that they get is off of the premium tax on policies sold. So if you don't buy insurance, then you're not really paying into this.
Well, hold on a second. If you say that last part again, I'm not sure I follow that. If you're not...
So, I mean, everybody in the state probably at some point is buying insurance on something and paying a premium tax.
Right.
So... it's not like a reduction off of...
No, but what they would normally pay on their premium tax, they are not paying because they had this additional liability.
If there was a company that went under...
That's right. So right. This doesn't happen a lot, but...
It's very rare that it happens.
But to understand the whole process, at the end of this process, the insurance companies are made whole by the taxpayers. I'm not trying to debate this today. I'm just saying
I wouldn't say they're made whole by the taxpayers. I'm saying that the amount that the insurance companies would have paid in taxes, they get to reduce that by the amount
that
they have put into this fund to cover the policies that they didn't ever
get any
money on.
So it's a socializing of the process, but my point is that it's not the policyholders that pay for it. It's the taxpayers that end up paying for it.
Well, I would say it is all the policyholders in the state,
That's not true, because whatever they pay on
because
that,
everybody's paying, if everyone's paying in premium taxes when you buy policy, when you buy a policy. So I would say it's all policyholders in the state, which most likely is probably 98% of taxpayers, unless someone out there never buys insurance.
Okay. My point is, in whether the members of this body care or not is indifferent, it looks like, because apparently they don't. But by doing this, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it, but what I'm saying is that by doing this, if a company was to ever go under,
right,
what this is doing is increasing the exposure of the state if potentially this situation ever occurs. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, Senator. I'm just saying that I would be willing to bet that prior to this discussion, the overwhelming number of members of this body didn't know how the guarantee fund worked.
I would probably say that is correct.
It's something that we don't deal with a lot.
It's something like every business can, you know, get a deduction off of their taxes because of how much they spend on something. So you could make that argument about a lot of different businesses.
But I don't think this is a deduction. I think this is an actual dollar for dollar.
I would say it's an offset.
It's a dollar for dollar.
Offset.
Right.
Not a deduction.
If it's a deduction, you're only getting the portion that you would typically pay in tax.
Right. It's an offset.
This is an offset. It's a dollar for dollar offset.
Right.
Okay. So what we're doing here, and I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, but the reality is this is going to increase the state's exposure if a company ever defaults, goes insolvent, whatever that is.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a company that ever went, that was any of significance, a lot of times the companies that go under are very small, and
it's $100,000.
$100,000 they have to do, and now we're going to $300,000 on life, and there's various different levels on different policies. But when this does happen, it's usually a small company, and it's just a blip on the radar.
Right. So, but what we're doing here is we're socializing the exposure if a company was to ever go.
You are incentivizing the insurance industry to step up and provide funds to this guarantee association, because they don't have to do it. And by doing that, we are allowing them to then do an offset on the back end off the
tax. That's my point. They're not doing it. The taxpayers are doing it. We're just not moving the money directly out of the state's bank account into the fund. We are using this mechanism that adds two more steps to the process. But ultimately, the company goes under.
Right.
So the policyholder is left hanging out there.
Correct.
The rest of the insurance companies come in and make them whole.
They assess themselves.
Yep.
They put money into a fund.
They then turn around and get an offset.
The following year, they can take an offset of what they paid in as an offset off of their taxes against their premium tax. Yes.
So ultimately, the taxpayer bears this. And I mean, at the end of the day, when the final buck is spent, it's the taxpayer who spent the final buck to make the insurance company whole, who spent their dollar to make somebody else's policy holder whole.
If you want to connect those dots all the way there, you can make that connection, yes.
Okay, it's a guarantee fund because the taxpayer backs the guarantee. If it otherwise, then what we would have...
No,
the insurance companies would never do this.
The taxpayers don't. We allow them
credit. They get a credit.
We allow them to have an offset, their next year's taxes, for them to pay into this fund as an incentive for the insurance industry to do this.
Spinning this in a fabulous way. But the point is ultimately the taxpayer ends up paying for it. That's what I'm getting to. My point here is right, wrong, and different. Ultimately, this ultimate liability ends with the taxpayer. Which is, by the way, was decided way before us. This isn't anything new. It's been operating like this for
decades.
That's right.
49 other states.
That's right. No, that's right. We're no different than anybody else. But the reality is the only time that I remember us dealing with this was when all the funeral insurance, and we moved all that into the guarantee fund.
Right.
In which we all thought was this great thing because the industry was going to step up and take care of these people who were essentially robbed in that particular case. But then the more that we learned about it, what we really learned was, well, it's actually the taxpayer that does it, even though it's a year later, because the ultimate dollar rests with the taxpayer. It's essentially, although nobody likes this term, it's essentially a government bailout, just one additional step in the process. And it's not a bailout for the industry, the tax, it's not a bailout for the insurance industry, it's a bailout for the company that ultimately went under because those premium, those policyholders would be left without anything otherwise. Fair or not?
That is a big stretch. In your view of the world, yes, you could call it that. I look at it as...
That'd be the conservative view, by the way. That's what Republicans used to be.
But I would charge that we make these insurance companies apply a premium tax to everything that they
sell. I'm not debating that. I'm not debating how
we got here. But we're the ones that are taxing them on every policy.
Agreed.
And then on the roundabout way, if a company ever goes under...
Agreed.
They put it... So if you want to call it that, I disagree that that's what it is, but I see how you are connecting the dots to get there.
Okay, wait a minute. I don't understand how you disagree with it when ultimately they get a tax offset.
Yes.
So it is actually the taxpayer ends up funding it at the end. Do we agree or disagree on that component?
I would say that we are incentivizing the insurance industry and socializing the cost over all policyholders.
I'm still struggling with how it's all policyholders when the guarantee fund, when they get the offset that comes out of the general revenue.
The way I believe it is,
it doesn't come out of general revenue.
Because it's off of the amount of the tax that every policyholder pays when they purchase a policy.
Okay, let's do this. Let's walk through a scenario. Company A defaults.
Right.
So the policyholders for Company A are now out there.
Right.
Company B, its share of helping take care of Company A, for this discussion's sake, let's say it's $10,000.
Right.
Just to make it an easy number. They pay the $10,000 into the pool, the policyholder, with everyone else, policyholders are made whole. Right?
Yes. Well, they're not made whole. They're made whole up to the limits.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So if I had a $1 million policy, they're only made whole the first 100,000.
That's fair.
And then we're going to raise the limits.
But the next step in this process is the $10,000 that Company B paid. If their tax liability this year is $1 million, just to make the math easy, minus they get to subtract the $10,000 off of the $1 million. So their actual tax liability is $990,000. Agreed that that's the process. So ultimately, the taxpayer ends up, or taxpayers, however you want to say it, the insurance company who made the contribution doesn't end up paying what they would pay otherwise in the tax component. So they don't send the money and then get it back. They
right.
just never send
they
the money
They just never send
with.
It, right.
So maybe the
they
offset's the right offset, word, whatever yeah. it is. So my point is we're socializing it.
Right.
I'm voting against your deal. I'm not going
right.
to try to hold you
right.
up here. I understand why you're trying to raise
right.
the limits because this has never evolved as policies and limits
right.
on policies have
right.
grown. But at the same time, understanding that...
That is how it works, yes.
That is how it works.
That is
it's
how it
more,
works.
This is more of a lesson on how the guarantee fund works than it is about what you're trying
right.
to do.
That is how it works, yes.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President...
Senator from Atchison.
I'd like to inquire the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield to the Senator from Worth?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I know that you've been listening to our dialogue, and the Senator from the 2nd, I'm not trying to derail what he's doing here. I'm trying to make the point that even though this is called the Guarantee Fund, and the insurance industries assess themselves to help cover that, ultimately the final step in this is that the taxpayer actually ends up bearing the cost in the end.
Senator, if you would be so kind as to end our inquiry, I'd like to inquire the Senator from the 2nd on this, just a point of clarification for me. So,
sure, absolutely. I thought you had some insightful...
Well, I'm trying to understand it a little bit more, and I think the Senator from the 2nd helped me understand it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. President, thank you.
President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 24th.
Can I please inquire the Senator from the 2nd?
The senior senator from St. Charles, do you yield to an inquiry?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Senator. Let's just go for like a hypothetical or an example so I can best understand. So I appreciate the fact that the revenues themselves are revenues that come from the taxation of premiums. Do you know what that percentage is? Is it a 2 or 3% tax on a premium? I don't even know what the number is.
2%. It's 2% tax on all policies sold in the state.
Okay, so in 2012, let's just say that the tax is $100 million, and that $100 million goes to general revenue. Is that what happens to it?
It doesn't all go to general revenue. It's siphoned off in various different pots.
Okay, and let's just say on the last day of 2012, a major insurance company goes under, and their policies total in the thousands, and they their insurance holders now are they've lost their ability to collect their premium. I mean their death benefit, and it's $1 billion in exposure. So what happens now? So there's only $100 million that have gone into the premium tax. So where does that $1 billion come from?
Okay, so in your example, you're saying if there's $1 billion worth of...
You said the small companies go under. I get that.
Right. So if there's a big company. If there's $1 billion, the association can only assess themselves 1%.
So it overwhelms the association then.
Right. So we're actually raising that to 2%,
okay,
which there's no way that wouldn't even create $1 billion. I mean, 2% of their maximum exposure, I don't have it in front of me, there's no way it would even get to that amount of policies that they would be able to cover.
So at that point, would the policyholders then be out of luck?
No, because the way it works now is I have $1 million life insurance policy on myself. I die, the company is out of business, so the guarantee fund would only cover, if this bill passes, would only cover the first $300,000 on my life policy. I still can go through the bankruptcy process and try to get assets, because there's assets in the insurance company. They're going to sell them and things of that nature. And I can still go and try to recoup that through the process. What the guarantee association does is it says, you have a claim, here's your cash right up front for the first $300,000. The rest you're going to have to go stand in line with every other creditor. And most likely you're going to get about 20 cents on the dollar. But you still would have the ability to get more of your recovered policy from the assets in the insurance company. But that will take 2 years, probably.
But what if the number of policyholders are in the thousands, and they're each have access to 300,000 in coverage? So if 10,000 policyholders have the same thing happen to them, and then they go to the fund to get $300,000 for each policyholder, what if that demand for those funds overwhelms the total amount of money in that guaranteed fund? What happens then?
Don't believe that would happen, because obviously you'd be having claims come in that period of time from that one company, because if there was existing policies and there wasn't a claim, an insurance company would come in and buy that book of business, and you would continue to pay on the policy to another insurance company. It's only those where there is a claim when the company has gone out of business. So it's not we're covering all policies moving forward, because that book of business would be sold. It's just those where there is an actual claim on the policy from the company that went under. So that the number is very, very small that would happen in that period of time, even with a huge insurer, like an AIG or something of that nature. Even with a huge insurer, the claims that would come in would not be big, you know, because it's a huge company, but it wouldn't be catastrophic to the state, because someone would come in and buy those policies or buy that book of business.
I appreciate that explanation. My concern is, you know, at the federal level, with respect to deposits, we have, you know, FDIC insured deposits. And prior to the 2008 economic collapse, that fund was about $90 billion. And the sad reality is that they stopped collecting, they stopped assessing banks in 05, 06, 07, because everything was so good. And when the economic collapse occurred, there's so many different reasons why the federal government felt compelled to bail out all the banks, not least of which was the reality that The FDIC insurance pool had nowhere near the assets that would be necessary to make whole on the trillions of dollars of insured deposits. So I appreciate...
What they did on the FDIC is they came into the banks and they said, you have to pay 3 years up front to get cash into the fund. And so the banks had to come in and write a check for 3 years of their FDIC payments up front to get cash into that fund.
Well, that's true. That assessment was placed on all banks, large or small, even community banks that didn't really have any... But the only reason that the bankruptcies didn't proceed was that the government backstopped all of the banks from... I mean, if J.P. Morgan had gone into default, the country would have overwhelmed the FDIC insurance pool. They would have a $1 trillion claim when there's $96 billion in assets. And so there's a lot of different reasons why the government stepped in the way they did, but not least of which is the fact that they knew that the public perceived this guaranteed deposit when in fact there wasn't money to guarantee it. So I guess, you know, I think in practical terms, everything you've described today is the reality. This fund is not new. It has existed. It's more often the case that a smaller insurance company is going bankrupt, not right. A larger one. And your point about if a larger one were to go bankrupt, that if a buyer could be found, and more often than not there is a buyer found, that we wouldn't get to the point where the demand for this $300,000 claim wouldn't necessarily overwhelm the fund. It would have to be like a, you know, 500-year storm for it to overwhelm it. But my concern is that if it were to be overwhelmed, does this mean that ultimately you get to the taxpayer money that wasn't part of this premium tax?
I don't believe so, because the insurance industry asked to raise the limit from 1% assessment to 2% because of the AIG situation, and they were the largest insurer in the world. That if there was one like that again, that 1% that they can assess themselves wouldn't cover it. But they think 2% would more than cover even an AIG or something of that nature. So they're kind of looking ahead saying, worst case scenario, if something like this were to happen again, we need to have that extra percent assessment on ourselves so that we could cover a huge company like that if we had a perfect storm like what happened a couple years ago.
Thank you for the inquiry.
Senator from the 8th, we ask you to follow the rules when entering and egressing. I'm sorry, Senator from the 24th, were you done with the inquiry? Okay. Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Davies, do you yield? Senator from Gentry, do you yield?
I do.
Yes, proceed.
All right, you used a term a few minutes ago that I want to focus on for just a second, and that term is bailout. And
yep.
So I understand where you're coming from on this. When you use the term bailout to describe what we're talking about here, who do you believe is getting bailed out here?
Ultimately, it is the company that went under. If no one was stepping up here, when they go under, their policyholders are left out there.
Right.
So essentially, they are no longer meeting their obligation as a company, and so the industry, for lack of a better term, the rest of the insurance companies are creating a fund by which they're going to set up and essentially cover the liability up to the caps anyway if there's policyholder claims that are out there.
Well, let
so
me submit.
It's a little bit the policyholder that has a claim pending. It's a little bit the company that went under. But let there be no confusion. The reason that we have the offset that we have here is because someone before us made a public policy decision to socialize this. Well, so I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. I'm saying that I'm not even debating whether there should be the credit or not, because we're mandating the insurance companies to go do this, and I believe that when you mandate someone to do something, you should pay for it. So I'm not debating whether or not we should pay for it. I'm just saying, Senator, that understanding that when you raise the liability that we are willing to back from $100,000 to $300,000, ultimately that does flow all the way through to us as taxpayers at some point.
And I understand that, and let me tell you why I think that's something that's worth doing, and that's because my view of it is, if anybody's getting bailed out here, it really is the policyholder who made their premium payments, purchased the coverage that they needed to protect themselves, and through no fault of their own, happened to have a loss at a time when the insurance company that they paid their premium to and bought their coverage from happened to go underground or happened to run into the ground and default. Not the consumer's fault, but at the end of the day, you know, whether it's a funeral director in your part of the state or somebody that entered into a structured settlement after getting injured on the job in my part of the state, that's the person who doesn't have the coverage that they paid for, and that's the person who maybe doesn't get made whole, but at the very least is able to recover a few cents on the dollar through the guarantee that otherwise wouldn't be there if you didn't have this fund. And I'll tell you too, I don't think I've ever seen, and I've seen some insurance receiverships in my day, I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where any money actually got paid back into the insurer that didn't go right on. I mean, it goes to the claim holder, not to the company. The company doesn't get a dollar.
Right.
In fact, usually
what the
company gets is prosecuted. has been my experience. I mean, and you've got a couple of those going on right now. I mean, in the structured settlement case, I can tell you, I don't know if the guy just didn't check up on his extradition treaties, but I think the feds grabbed him on a boat in Belize, and he's. You know, he's wearing tangerine now. So I just want to clarify that who's getting bailed out is the person who paid their premiums, incurred the risk, had a loss, and just had the misfortune of doing business with the wrong insurer. I don't see this as something that helps the bad actor here, which is the insurance company that either defrauded
that,
people or
and I didn't, didn't. That's not my point. My point, which you completely missed in my dialogue with the senator from the second, was ultimately this liability falls to the state. I'm not debating whether we should or we shouldn't. If we're going to continue to mandate that insurance companies do this, then there's a legitimate argument that I will concede that if we're going to mandate they do it, then we should pay for it. But my point is when we change this statute does not have this is a statute change that ultimately will impact us as a state. And it impacts us because the ultimate final dollar that is paid or used to make those policy holders whole are tax dollars that are not paid in.
Well, said another way, we're talking about a tax incentive to incentivize insurers
to fund
this. It's
not an incentive. It's a complete and utter complete offset. It's an incentive is like, okay, if you spend a dollar, I'll give you 25 cents back. Like that's an incentive. Or if you spend 75 cents, I'll put the other 25 cents in. This is a dollar for dollar offset. So we got to stop using the dialogue in this building that incentives when they're complete offsets. They're called subsidies. So I understand what an incentive is. An incentive is a small portion that you use to get someone to do something they wouldn't do otherwise. That's not what this is.
Well, if we
this is a mandate that we fund.
And the question before us is to what extent does it get funded?
That's correct, Senator. I agree completely.
And I will just say that having seen a couple of half-billion-dollar messes, I want to see a guarantee fund that can take care of the consumer who's left holding the bag. Because I got to tell you, when one of these insurers goes toes up, it's never a small mess.
No,
it's never a little bit of money involved. It's never a handful of policies. It's never, when they default, it's not by a few whiskers. It's a big mess, and we can debate offset versus incentive. I just don't want to, I just would like to live in a world where when an innocent actor does their job, pays their premiums, has a loss, that's what they were smart enough to get the insurance for in the first place, isn't victimized by somebody else's bad act, whether it's incompetence in running their insurance company or in many cases something criminal.
You're absolutely. I think the best articulation that describes what we're doing right now is we are deciding on what limit and what level of liability we're going to have. So I don't think the debate here is whether we're going to have it or not. That ship sailed probably decades ago when they established this public policy. The policy that we're deciding now is to what degree. And you know what? My prediction is this body is going to overwhelmingly increase it to $300,000. That's okay. I'm fine with that. I'm just saying, understand that when we do that, that liability is ultimately liability that we as a state will share as we ultimately make those policyholders whole.
And I respect that. Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator from the 8th, what purpose do you rise?
Require the senator from the 2nd.
The senior senator from St. Charles, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I thought it was really disrespectful of the president earlier, not this president, to not call on you earlier when you had the,
I know,
the senior senator in the body, and you should be called
on. My arm was hurting. Bill LaRue had to come over and hold my arm up. There was even like an Aaron reference from the Bible or something. I don't remember.
Well, that's over and done. I want to talk to you real quick about the deduction versus credit.
More of an offset than a deduction.
So you say it's not a deduction now?
It's not a deduction. It's an offset.
It's an offset.
It's an offset. Dollar for dollar offset.
Because okay, so, we understand that a deduction comes off before taxes. So if you had a $100,000 liability,
it's an offset.
You would deduct it down to $90,000 and then pay taxes on the $90,000. This is more of a credit. Credit is a situation where you get all of the money. You owe $100,000. You have a credit would say, okay, take $1,000 off of that because you paid $1,000 into the deduction. So it's a credit. You want to call it an offset? We can.
Well, I think it's an offset because it's what I would have paid. Like a credit is, you weren't supposed to pay. It's like you can use this for a future time for this dollar amount, and it's a dollar amount specified. Where an offset is, you owe this and you paid this, so it's more than I think an offset's a better way of looking at it.
I can understand why you'd want to say an offset versus a credit in this scenario. So let's just move on. You chair the Insurance Committee. My question is the underlying bill. I understand what the underlying bill does, but how we got to this point, why insurance companies are basically not insuring themselves against default.
No, they do. They buy reinsurance. Insurance companies.
So why is that not covering this? Why are taxpayers on the hook to cover this when somebody defaults?
It does. Insurers buy reinsurance, the reinsurance companies, in case there's a catastrophic amount of claims at one time and they don't have the cash flow to cover it, they purchase reinsurance and that comes in. What the guarantee association is if the company goes under. So they had enough. Mr. President, there's phones going off.
How disrespectful.
There is a cell phone on the Senate floor. Please put it on silence. Remove the cell phone or move yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah. So they do buy reinsurance, and all companies have to buy reinsurance. Right. So this is if there's a catastrophic amount of claims, the company didn't have enough assets, their reinsurance, covered so much, and then at that point they still.
Whoa! You lost your mic. Trying to get too far away from your desk, there, Senator.
I think I broke it. Oh, it's still there.
It worked. They were nice enough to turn it off so that it wouldn't,
have
to.
Yeah, so you didn't hear the. So at that point, after reinsurance is exhausted, the company still goes under, and there is claims outstanding. Then the guarantee association kicks in.
In most cases, we as individual insurers would have an umbrella policy. Why is the insurance companies not having an umbrella policy, paying into a situation so that our taxpayers, your constituents, my constituents, don't have to bail them out for failure to plan ahead?
Well, they do. They buy reinsurance to reinsure.
You said that once. I get that. I understand
they do
but
buy.
But my whole point is I think that the underlying bill you're trying to improve is flawed. I don't believe it's government's role to bail out industries or businesses when they fail. They need to have proper insurance to cover it and pay a premium to cover that.
Right. Now you buy insurance to cover your losses, but to carry a dollar for dollar cash amount on every policy that you have a risk out there for, there would be no insurance. No insurance company could have that much cash.
And here's what I would say.
So it's all spreading the risk, and you're looking at probability.
That's
and
great.
They have to have X amount of reinsurance to cover their risk, but to have an insurance company have enough cash on hand to cover every single policy they write, that if they all came due on one day, you would not have insurance companies because no one would ever be able to have that much cash.
What I'm saying here is, Senator, instead of taxpayers being on the hook to bail out this guarantee fund, the insurance industry themselves should be paying into a premium in covering this by themselves and not having the taxpayers on the hook. Now, we can't fix that with this bill at this point. I think that that's a better way to go. I think the underlying bill is flawed.
And this is how insurance in every state is done. They have a guarantee association. This is how the insurance industry operates in the United States. Every state, the taxpayers are on the hook.
So
every state has that.
Fails.
Every state has this. Yes.
Well, we need to lead the way and show the rest of the nation
how to do
it correctly.
You file that bill by Thursday, and I'll gladly give you a hearing next year.
Give me a hearing probably wouldn't go very far, right? Because, I mean, who wouldn't want the taxpayers to be on the hook for it? As an industry, in the insurance industry, I want the taxpayer dollars because that doesn't come out of my pocket. So I think that bill has very little chance of passing.
Yeah.
Senator, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Putnam.
Senator from Nottoway, do you yield?
I do.
Do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, what I heard was that if there's a business that has extraordinary losses, that we shouldn't expect the people to pay for that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay,
that's in my utopia.
Okay,
that's
well,
not
then
the world we live
then
in.
I just
here.
Want to ask that you remember a couple of years ago we had this huge flood in northwest Missouri.
Right.
And some of the farmers who are, by the way, businessmen,
correct,
got some help from the state.
To do what?
To fix their fields, to scrape all the sand off of their fields.
I don't think the state funded any of that. The only thing the state did.
You don't think that the state emergency management did put any money?
What about the federal government did?
Well, didn't the state
in
a portion?
The state built the roads that were washed out.
Well, didn't
but under your philosophy, we should tell Joplin to pound sand.
Well, that's my question. Is that your philosophy? Should
no.
we tell Joplin
I
to pound sand?
I believe the state should go in. I believe that we should rebuild infrastructure. I believe that we're going to have the opportunity later this session
to deal with legislation to help Joplin redo that.
What's that? The senator from Boone's not in here right now, but if you ask the senator from Boone how much of the cleanup the state of Missouri's had to fund, it is almost none.
Well, but
the federal government has
done
almost all of it.
Well, what about the federal government? Should the federal
government... No, I get it. You're in the insurance industry. You want the guarantee fund. I got it.
No, I'm asking. So if it's not the state, it's the public policy. Should it be the federal government go and clean up the sand in northwest Missouri?
Well, the reason the federal government funded it is because the federal government put it there through poor public policy of the Missouri River.
Oh, so you think it was poor public policy.
I know it's poor public policy. If you run the river based on flood control versus on the lakes up north, you wouldn't have the...
And
the Pallid Spurgeon. I've been in this core fight with the river for decades.
What about the federal government cleaning up Joplin? Do you think that was a good public policy?
That is good public policy.
And the reason is?
Because there's no one community... Or in that particular case, even a state that could fund that type of an overwhelming
disaster.
So it's okay
for the federal government to do it with federal tax dollars, but not the state government to do
Let's be honest, there were three different groups that helped fund that. Number one would be the private insurance folks, right? Folks that have private insurance and the private insurance come in to pay and they help clean up their lots, their homes, whatever it is, help rebuild.
But what about those that didn't have insurance?
Well, that's another discussion.
Well, it's the same exact discussion
here. No, it's not. This is about when a company goes under.
Well, sure it is.
No, this is not even close to being the same discussion,
okay.
Senator.
Well, let's look at...
You are operating in a world that I can't even understand at this point.
Oh, right.
Which is not uncommon, but go ahead.
Okay, well, let's just say that I am a physician.
Agreed.
And that I have medical malpractice insurance.
Agreed.
With a company that's not a 383 company.
Agreed.
It's covered by
yep.
the Missouri Guaranteed
right.
Trust Company.
You bet.
Okay, and so I get a lawsuit filed against me, and I have a $1 million policy. So the lawsuit...
You as a physician.
...is against me as a physician,
right.
saying that I committed malpractice so on. And the company that I'm insured with goes under.
Okay.
Okay, so...
During your lawsuit.
Yeah, no...
Even before it.
Just say the day after the lawsuit is filed.
Okay. So you no longer have the insurance.
Right. Normally, I would expect that company then to hire an attorney, represent me, and if I lose, to pay up to $1 million. And that's what I paid for, right? Now, let's just say that I'm now covered by the Missouri Guaranteed Association or
okay.
whatever. Now my limit of liability is suddenly dropped from $1 million to $100,000.
Okay.
And let's just say that
there is a claim that is settled for, you know, $1 million. I'm on the hook now for
$900,000.
Right. So let's just say that we didn't have the Missouri guarantee thing. Okay, who's going to pay the $100,000? I am.
Mm-hmm. You as an individual.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what am I going to do? I'm going to pass it on to the people that... I'm going to pass it on if I'm the hospital.
Right.
I will pass it on. And so the consumers will pay more money.
Correct.
And they will deduct those payments since they're health care, more than likely.
Okay.
So because of the fact that they're deducting it, in aggregate, all those people are going to pay less taxes, right?
Yeah, let's assume that's right.
And then all those people that had to pay more, you know, all of those taxes are going ultimately... the people are going to pay it anyway.
But under your scenario, it's a tax deduction versus a dollar-for-dollar offset, credit, whatever clever word the senator from the second wants to use.
And so they could put me out of business, actually.
They absolutely could.
And is
then
it
you file
in
bankruptcy.
And is it in... Right? Is it in the good public policy that we don't put people out of business? Just like we don't put the farmers in Northwest Missouri out of business when their property is covered with sand.
We do put them out of business. I mean, they're out of business until the fields are clean. They're out of business until
right,
the infrastructure is back.
Right, and I would be out of business until I make, you know.
Until same deal, until you get your practice back up.
But what I'm trying to say to you is that there is a benefit to the public policy of this system.
Okay, hey, I get it. You like to socialize the policy. I'm not debating that. I'm not debating that we should do this or shouldn't do this. There's a legitimate argument that many in here probably say, yeah, let's socialize it. Okay. My point of this discussion now is understand that when this bill passes, what we are doing is we're increasing the ultimate liability to the state if a company was to ever go under. So the policy's already in place.
Actually, I don't see how we're actually doing that.
Well, instead of paying $100,000 per policy, now we're putting ourselves on the hook for up to $300,000.
Right, and instead of having $300,000 passed on to in excess costs, we're only having $100,000 or whatever. We're having $200,000 less passed on in costs. So, I mean, it's a wash either way you go.
I agree that there's an economic impact either way you go. I don't agree that it's a wash either way you go.
Well, it as far as I'm concerned, it's a tax credit.
It is a tax credit.
But, you know, did you vote for the tax credits for benevolence?
I did.
Well,
it's,
I mean...
social policy.
It's a social
right.
policy.
And that's okay. And that's the same discussion we're having here.
And is it okay to have this social policy?
It is okay to have a social policy.
Well, then let's vote for this bill and get it done.
Well, I'm not going to vote for the bill, but it's going to get done.
Okay.
I mean, I get it. I think that this is a learning moment for everybody in here. The senator from Buchanan is a big government senator. He is advocating for the growth
senator.
Of liability.
Senator!
He's advocating
senator,
for the growth of
Senator, how can you say that I'm a big government senator?
Well, Senator, you filed the legislation
to create a database for the sporting events? Because I voted no.
I voted no. But I believe you filed legislation to put everybody's drug information in a database. Did you not file that bill?
Actually,
I thought you did file that bill. I'm pretty sure you filed it. Yeah, you did file it.
Did you vote for that last time?
I did not.
Well, I voted to put it to a vote of the people. I mean, I introduced a bill.
You either filed legislation to put everybody's information into a database or you didn't.
Well, but it would go to a vote.
Am I right or wrong?
It would go to a vote of the people.
I mean, I get it, Senator. Socialize insurance risk, take personal information, vital personal health care information, put it into a database.
And will you filibuster that bill like crazy?
I just think it's ironic, Senator.
All right, Senator.
Thank you.
I love you, man. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from St. Joseph.
The Senator from Buchanan?
R. Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Sure.
He does. Proceed.
And I just want to clarify one of the points you made in your earlier inquiry with the senator from Nottoway. So the bill is about a failed insurance company, which is a failed business endeavor, and whether or not a failed business endeavor should essentially be backstopped. And I would contend that what it is we're backstopping the industry, because the industry creates a pool that when businesses fail, they go to that pool to get money, and if that pool runs out of money, or the way to fund that pool comes back to taxpayers. And you tried to suggest that a natural disaster is analogous. So so stepping in at a time of need when a natural disaster occurs is the same as bailing out a business.
Except we're not bailing out the insurance company. What we're doing is we're bailing out the company or the businesses that the insurance company insures. The insurance company's dead. It's gone away because it's bankrupt. It's never going to be seen again. But this is analogous in that we as a nation send our tax dollars to Washington, D.C., and then when bad things happen to, say, farmers or the city of Joplin, then that money then is spent to get those businesses back up and running again. And it's okay to do that, so why is it not okay to have the insurance companies band together, pay into this pool, and then help the businesses that were insured? It's analogous.
Well, except that when you're you're providing economic relief to the industry itself, the individual companies as they pay into this pool. I mean, your point is the person that gets the $300,000 benefit, you're bailing them out, no fault of their own. They bought a policy. The company they bought it from went bankrupt. And that's the same as if your farm gets flooded.
Well, I mean, it's a bad thing that happened. I mean, property and casualty insurance could be your house got blown away by a tornado, and then the company went bankrupt.
Right.
And so the Guarantee Association comes in and says, well, we will give $100,000 for your torn down building, but we won't. All the senator from the second's trying to do is raise it to $300,000.
Yeah, I guess
it's kind of the same thing.
You know what? I think I'm probably where the senator from the eighth is on this. Is that I get what you're saying. I think if the industry existed without the backstop, that's probably where I prefer it to be. The backstops exist, so all we're talking about is how much relief do we give the policyholders. So, okay, I appreciate the inquiry, Senator.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from Barton, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Davies, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. And I think I understand where you are with the background here. You're talking about the relative change from the 100 to 300,000. And I think wanting to make sure that the body understands that although this doesn't increase anyone's tax liability, it doesn't decrease state revenue.
If a company goes under.
Right.
So, this isn't a debate about the public policy. I mean, I actually believe that if we're gonna mandate these companies to do these things, there's a legitimate argument that we should pay for it, which is what's happening here.
So we're basically tripling the state's
potential liability.
Potential loss of revenue.
That's right.
Okay. So, and of course, we're at a revenue...
Right. So, part of the argument here is if you're the industry, they're right in their argument that these levels have been there forever, right, and they haven't been increased. That's correct. But it's easy to say let's increase them when ultimately the taxpayer pays for it if that situation ever occurs.
Right. And I think
so
I'm not faulting
the industry. I'm just saying understand what we're doing here.
Right. I think there's something that's even more fundamental to understanding it, and I don't know that I'm going to oppose this because it's the structure that I have concerns about more than the amount at this point. The amount certainly is a concern, but it's more the structure. If you were buying insurance, if you knew that this protection existed, would that make you more or less diligent in examining the company you were buying your insurance
from? Well, I think that the policies that people buy at today in most cases are substantially higher than $100,000. So I think that the due diligence still occurs because they're not banking on the state ultimately having to back their policy. They believe the company's going to be there to back it.
Right.
So
right.
I don't want to confuse this, that the state makes the policyholder completely whole, because they don't. They only cover today $100,000. This would be a potentially going up to $300,000. But I would assume most people buy policies of, you know, $3, $5, $1 million, you know, higher limit policies than what were originally, higher limit policies relative to the limits whenever $100,000 was put in place.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure, sure. And I agree. And I think, I mean, to the senator from the second's credit, I think what he's trying to do here is acknowledge that there has been a general, all across the whole country, acceptance that it is socially responsible to make sure that the purchaser of these policies is not the only one at risk should the company fail.
That's correct.
And I guess my contention is once we've crossed that line, we haven't really created a more secure business environment. We've actually created a more at-risk business environment because you have a customer who doesn't have to be quite as concerned about which company he hires, because he's going to be covered if his company fails. And you have maybe a board of directors that doesn't have to be quite as determined, because they're not going to be on the hook if the company fails. There'll be no lawsuits because the state will step in and will take care of that. And so I think this, just the whole structure, tends to be have an impact. And now, granted, it's an impact that we've accepted. It's an impact that the marketplace has already adjusted to.
That's right.
But my guess, you know, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to take all the risk out of an insurance. Out of insurance policy holder. And you're not an economist, as far as I know. I'm not an economist, but I know some. And my guess is if we ask them what it would cost to take all the risk out of life, it would be a pretty high dollar amount. And yet that's the direction that we're working here, if we're not careful. Not necessarily that this bill is the culprit. It may not be. But I think it definitely gives us a little insight into what happens when we as a state accept that it's our responsibility to create a fault-free environment, a risk-free environment. Because now we're having to raise the amount. We're raising it from $100,000 to $300,000.
And, you know, as time moves forward, there'll be those who follow us who will raise it again.
Right.
So, Senator, I just want you to know, as a person who, you know, you ran and campaigned on conservative values, and you're going to come up here and be a conservative voice, as the senator to my left continues to try to increase the state's liability to future exposure, as the senator on my right erodes away of personal freedoms by putting everybody's health information into a database, I just want you to know that I will continue to be the senator, the pillar of conservative values in this back row. So thank you, Senator.
One final question, Senator.
Yes.
Do you know where in our state constitution that this is defined as our responsibility?
You know, you'd have to ask the former senator from the first. He loved to carry that constitutional book around and wave it here on the floor, and he could talk extensively about that. But I think it'd be tough to find in the Constitution where this was one of our fundamental responsibilities.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Seeing none, the senator from second is recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm so glad that we had a thorough discussion on the inner workings of the Guarantee Association. Just to bring us all back to home on why we are here. We are here because in all other states in the United States, this is how insurance companies operate. We make them charge a premium tax. We make them collect a premium tax. We make them buy reinsurance in case they have catastrophic risk. But if by chance they have a huge issue where they have went through all their assets, they have went through their reinsurance, and they still go out of business, and there's some claims sitting out there, we allow the insurance industry to assess themselves a portion of the premium tax that they charge, and then that they don't have to turn back in for putting money into this fund to make sure that policyholders that have paid their premiums are kept whole. Not 100%, only up to $300,000 on a life policy, which is far below what the average person typically buys, and things of that nature. So all we're trying to do by this is just raise the limits of the guarantee on those different types of policies to keep it in line with the normal amounts that people are insuring their lives, their businesses, and all these things for. So that's what we're doing. It is good business. It is good stewardship. It's pro-consumer.
That is why we are here. But I'm glad that we are now smarter and more educated on how the inner workings of the Guarantee Association Fund works. On that, Mr. President, I close.
The senator from the second renews his motion that Senate Bill number 59 be read a third time and finally pass. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Senate Bill number 59, an act relating to the regulation of insurance guarantee associations. Senator Brown.
Aye.
Chappelle Nadal.
Aye.
Cunningham. Curls. Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, McKenna, Mundlinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce,
aye.
Richard,
aye.
Romine,
aye.
Roop,
aye.
Sater,
aye.
Schaff,
aye.
Schaefer, Schmidt,
aye.
Sifton,
aye.
Sylvie,
aye.
Wallingford,
aye.
Walsh,
aye.
Wasson.
Aye.
Senator from Webster.
Vote aye.
Senator from Green. Senator from Franklin.
Aye.
Senator from the 8th. By your vote of 29 aye, 4 no, the bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 88, the Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 88 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 88 be read a third time and put upon its final passage. This bill basically fixed a problem with the amount that could be charged for electronic medical records. We discussed it yesterday. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Barry, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
So you're not trying to rip the public off here, are you, Senator?
Actually, I'm a small government type of guy, contrary to what the Senator from Nottoway said. No, I absolutely would never try to do that.
I know you wouldn't. What is, you know, in the cost of doing business, shouldn't this just be the cost of doing business rather than, you know, for a healthcare provider to provide copies of records, shouldn't that just come under the expenses of business rather than charging an extra fee?
Well, don't you believe that businesses should receive a fair amount for the services that they provide?
I'm a believer in the free market system. And if the product is good, then you will be reimbursed for your efforts. If the product is bad, then you probably won't exist or go out of business.
So you would advocate then that all hospitals and other medical providers should just provide their medical records without charging for them?
I think that's the cost of doing business.
Okay, well.
Like your heating and air conditioning and your maintenance that goes into the buildings. It's just all part of doing business.
And don't you think those costs get passed on one way or the other?
Yes, they do, but this is a definite pass-on here, to where it's a statute we're talking about, to what you're mandating a fee. And it's, you know, I just, I just disagree with how, if you were suggesting that the business or the healthcare provider could do this optionally, that would be fine. But
well, the thing
to mandate a fee.
This bill doesn't mandate any fee. It just simply mandates that the fee can't exceed a certain amount.
Right. Okay, let's go on to, we have both the copying of paper records, and then we also have the electronic records. Could you explain to me why the fee for the electronic records is more than taking a piece of paper and having to copy it manually?
It's not that the fee is more. The fee is actually less. The cap is more.
The cap is more, that's right.
Right, the cap is more in a global sense, but there is an unlimited cap on paper. There is a cap on the per paper fee, but theoretically, if it's a large file, the fee for paper under the cap could be many times more than the cap totally on the electronic.
What was the cap on the electronic before?
Well,
or was there a cap?
Right. It was $5 plus 50 cents per page, or $25 total, whichever is less. And the problem was...
So now you've gone up to $100.
Right.
You've increased it by $75.
You understand what the problem was.
Okay.
The problem was is that when providers, hospitals, whoever, were given the option of providing it electronically or sending it as paper, given that the maximum that they could charge for the electronic was less than their cost, they chose to send paper, which could cost multiple hundreds of dollars. And so, as a result, the state and everybody else who requests records would not get it electronically. They would only get it by paper. So that the idea here is by passing this bill, we will then remove that barrier so that records can be sent electronically.
I think, you know, just at first glance of it, it looks like, you know, that we're charging a lot more for...
I know, but sometimes at first glance you have to look deeper than that, Senator.
Yes,
you know,
that's
you just
true.
Have to kind of look down.
Well, it's kind of like the whole philosophy of free enterprise versus socialism.
Don't you love
you know,
that free enterprise?
To where... Anyway. But anyway, I appreciate the inquiry. I do have a problem with government mandating
I
a certain
fee. I hate
that
government mandates, don't you?
I do.
I do, too.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the Ninth, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. May I inquire of the Senator from Buchanan?
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, you know I have much appreciation for the comments here of the Senator. I had those same questions yesterday. I do think they have been clarified, however, today, and I feel very comfortable with it. As it was explained to me, as I think you are explaining, that sometimes if there happens to be maybe a 400-page medical file, and folks are wanting to send it electronically, clearly it would cost many of those doctor's offices more than $25 just to be able to have their staff to be able to send those records from, say, a file that may be 400 pages long.
Right.
So with that, I do have more appreciation. I have more understanding of it, clearly, than I did yesterday. And I can appreciate the new cap, not that $100 has to be charged, but that would then be a maximum that could be charged in the event. So,
right. And it is felt that the $100 is very reasonable and that most records would fit under that $100 cap.
Right. Yeah. In that event, I agree then that the $25 fee was probably less than I would expect it to be in those circumstances.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from Worth, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire the Senator from the 29th.
Senator from the 29th, you take an inquiry from the Senator from Grundy?
Do I yield?
Do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I heard the beginning of your dialogue with the Senator from Buchanan. The fee today, the fee is what? What's the dollar amount that is in statute for this fee?
I don't have that information, I'm sorry, is what the amount of it is.
Yeah, you were talking about that he's increasing the fee in statute or something like that?
Yes, we're increasing the fee in statute, yes.
From what to what?
I think it was, for the electronic, it was $25, now it's up to $100.
A 400% increase?
300%. That's the way I have it figured.
Okay, he's arguing that's a 300% increase. So
either
this
a 300% or 400%
increase. Now filed
increase.
Legislation to put all of my health care drugs in a database. We're now debating his 300% fee increase.
Yes.
He wants to socialize the risk of insurance amongst the taxpayers of the state. And he wants to stand on this floor and hold himself out as the conservative. Am I getting this right?
That's what my whole philosophy was on inquiring of the senator, was that I'm a free enterprise guy. I am not a person who...
Years ago, when he and I came into the House, years ago, he was a free enterprise guy.
He was a what? I'm sorry.
A free enterprise guy. Used to believe in the private sector.
He did.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, years of being in this building, hanging out with MHA and those other, you know, the folks who are lobbying him for bigger government solutions.
You know, I'm sad to hear that. I'm sad to hear it.
Thanks to us.
Fortunately, I get to go home and my wife straightens me out. And I get to go home and talk to other business people and local people, and they straighten me out also. So it's good not to be up here too much.
I try to tell the senator from Buchanan that, but he really likes it here.
But I think you understand why I had a philosophical problem with this legislation.
No, I think you raise a valid point. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the point is this is a 300% fee increase. I never remember doing a 300% fee increase on anything in my 11 years here. This is the single largest percentage fee increase I ever remember the legislature passing.
Yes, and of course, I would just soon not have any legislation that required a fee.
What's that, Senator?
I would just as soon not have any legislation that required
fees. Yeah, that the free market will work it out.
Let the free market system work it out.
I mean, to you and I, entrepreneurial type people who believe in the free market system, that would make sense. But
yes.
Others believe that we should mandate in statute what people can and can't do.
Yes, and I'm definitely against that.
Senator, I just wanted to clarify.
While
you and the senator from Buchanan were talking, at the time the senator from the second was in here and
it was complaining about his last 45 minutes. It just really hit you as to the large increase that happened.
I think this is another one of those learning opportunities for us as a body. The evolution that people go through from when they first arrive in this building through these moments of being true conservatives, through the as you watch the legislation that is filed, the freedoms they are willing to erode away, the incredible fee increases they're willing to put forward, and ultimately the socialization of our society that they advocate for, it's hard to understand how they want to hold themselves out.
Well, I hope that if you see me doing something similar, that you will come to me and inform me of my wrongdoing.
All right. Well, Senator, after this dialogue, I think it's important that this body take a hard look and look in the mirror and say, can I really support a 300% fee increase or not? I hope the majority of the members decide they cannot, and I would urge our colleagues to vote against this incredible, incredible tax increase.
Well, I agree with you 100%. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. It was so enlightening to listen to that last discussion about this cap increase, which is not a fee increase. But anyway, with that, I close.
The senator from Buchanan renews his motion that Senate Bill number 88 be read a third time and finally passed. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 88, an act relating to medical records. Senator Brown. Chappelle Nadal. Cunningham. Curls. Dempsey. Dixon. Emery. Holzman. Justice. Kevney. Kehoe. Krause. Lager. Lamping. Lavoda. Libla. McKenna. Munzlinger. Nasheed. Nieves. Parson. Pierce. Richard. Romine. Roop. Sater. Schaff. Schaefer. Schmidt. Sifton?
Aye.
Sylvie?
Aye.
Wallingford?
No.
Walsh?
Aye.
Wasson?
Senator from Green.
Mr. President, I vote aye.
Senator from the Fifth. By your vote of 28 aye, 5 no, the bill, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. And I ask you to call the calendar.
Seeing no objection, we are on the Senate bills for perfection. Seeing no objection, we will go on the calendar. Senate Bill 13, Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, in lieu of the Senator from Boone not in the building today, I would ask that Senate Bill 13 be laid over.
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 120, the Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay that bill on the informal calendar?
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 60, the senior senator from St. Charles County.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 60 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the second.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 60 be ordered, perfected, and printed. Senators, we're going to talk about insurance again. And it's boring. And it's dull. And it's technical. This bill deals with collateral for reinsurance companies. Yes, you can hear the groans by the senator over here. What this bill simply says is that if you're a reinsurer, there are several ways of which you can collateralize your a company. And we are providing an additional option for insurance companies that want to collateralize. This is a National Association of Insurance Commissioners unanimously approved these changes in 2011. So all the heads of the state's insurance commissioners get together and they try to streamline insurance law to make it easier to operate in all the different 50 states when people sell policies. One of the things they came up with was this little nugget talking about credit for reinsurance and how they collateralize themselves. Simply what we are saying is under the current law, they can go get a letter of credit and they can put up cash or a letter of credit in the same amount of all of the risk that they have out there. It is a huge burden to these insurance companies to have to buy a letter of credit or put up this amount of cash that they can use in a better way to go out and expand their company. So this just allows them to buy more. Simply. I had to say simply five more times to appease the senator from Franklin. This allows them another way to collateral themselves by not having to put up a letter of credit or cash in the total amount of the risk that they have. They can use actuarials and say, we don't have to have this amount of cash sitting in the sidelines, this letter of credit, so it frees up capital so they can expand. They still have to have an actuarial, say they are fiscally sound. They still have to go through all the rating agencies. This is just one other option. It's about five options of how they can collateralize themselves. And we're allowing them to do this to keep us uniform with all the other 50 states on how reinsurance companies collateralize themselves. I will gladly answer any questions. If not, Mr. President, I would renew my motion.
The senator from the second moves that Senate Bill number 60 be taken up for perfection. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion?
Boring.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
That must have been a great explanation, Mr. President. I close.
The senator from the second moves that Senate Bill number 60 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have perfected and ordered printed Senate Bill number 60. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 23. The senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 23 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill number 23 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Mr. President, this bill has to do with Pettus County and Pettus County only. Last year, they voted a transit guest tax in to be able to promote tourism. For tourism and also for salary, which become the issue in this bill. And in 1992, I believe it was, this bill was introduced and had a provision that says the money couldn't be used for salary. The community didn't realize that, I guess, last year, and that's what this bill is trying to utilize that, or to be able to, for them to be able to use the money to promote tourism and be used for salary for tourism. I might add that the county commissioner, the mayor, the people in that county has sent letters of support for this bill. And with that, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Polk renews his motion that Senate Bill number 23 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and order printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer Senate Resolution 381 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics.
It will be so referred.
Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
Without objection, the Senate will go the order of business of messages from the House of Representatives, and I ask that the Secretary please read the message.
Seeing no objection, Madam Secretary, please read the messages from the Senate. I'm sorry, from the House.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 202, entitled An Act Relating to the University of Missouri Extension Districts, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested, respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until we'll go to announcements first. Excuse me. Let's go to announcements, then we'll recess.
Announcements. Any announcements? Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 4:30 this day.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are in recess until 4:30 p.m. this day.